You're listening to Classic Business with Michael Avery, brought to you by Altron, there when it matters.
Welcome back to Classic Business, brought to you by Altron Technology, partners in your digital transformation journey. For more information, visit them at altron.com. Altron, there when it matters. Now, what matters most for us right now is the fact that it's savings month. Don't switch the station just yet. I know, you're probably rolling your eyes. How do we save when, if you're in the private sector especially, your salary has barely kept pace with inflation? Last few years, when water and lights have gone up many times, inflation over the last 10 years, when the economy is in the toilet. I know, I hear you, but rather counterintuitively, these are reasons more than ever to start looking at ways to chisel out some form of savings if you haven't started, unless your retirement plan is to live off your kids, or if you're banking on a basic universal income, or you like the idea of a Sasser-imposed baked bean diet in your 60s and beyond. And if you are saving already, well done. Perhaps it's time to look at ways in which you can just squirrel away that little bit more to not only save but to invest, because the two are distinctly different. Now, we've gathered a trio of, shall we call them, sagacious savers around the table for you tonight to help. Firstly, in studio is Liberty Financial Advisor Carlo Gill. Carlo, good to see you again.
Hi, how you doing, Mike?
Very well, thanks. On the line, I've got Dr. Adrian Saville, CEO of Cannon Asset Managers. Adrian, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me with you.
And Gerald Mwandiambira, the acting CEO of the South African Savings Institute and author of My Money. Gerald, it's been a while. Hope you're keeping well.
I'm good, Michael. It's been a while. Yeah.
Adrian, we're a nation of spenders. Flashy cars before financial plans. How bad is the savings rate in South Africa?
Three places to go for savings numbers, Michael. The obvious three, or the three big places, are the business sector, the household sector, and government. Those are your three big domestic sources of potential saving. And for a long time, the South African business sector, corporates, have been very healthy savers, making substantial contributions to the national savings pool. As you would expect in a country in South Africa's state of economic development, government tends to spend more than it receives, and so we regularly run government budget deficits. So government doesn't save, and that is fed by the dissaving offsets to some extent the corporate sector savings. But I guess, you know, for tonight's conversation, the subject that we're really after is the amount to which you and I save, and we call that in economics the household sector. And the net household saving rate in South Africa, not just for last year but for many years in a row, stands at 0%, which means all pooled together, we simply don't save.
0%, a big fat donut. I mean, that, as I said in my introduction, I'm sure many people would argue that they simply can't afford to save because of the creep of taxes and the rate of inflation growing faster than our salaries. But Gerald, it is really important that we get to turn this thing around. What does your institute see as the primary reasons that South Africans are such poor savers? No pun intended.
Well, I think the primary reason is because we choose to borrow. And unfortunately, the converse is that most South African households are indebted to the tune of almost 70% of their household income going to servicing debt. So the reason why we are net dissavers is largely because we have chosen credit over saving. And a lot of people are still digging themselves out of deep holes which they have set themselves. And what we are trying to do now is to remind people that saving should not happen once your debt is settled, because in times like this, when retrenchments and there's a lot of economic uncertainty around, if you do not have any savings, regardless of how great you've been at paying off your debts, it all adds up to naught. So we're trying to get people to realize that save all the time, even whilst you're in debt. And once your debt is gone, save even more.
Carla, how does that typical conversation go when you want to get your clients to save and invest more?
Well, that's typical conversation across the table. So when we generally do a very quick or just a 5-minute budget, the first things that come up is the repayments that that each household is paying towards some type of loan. And typically we see what is left there to save. And yeah, we're quite close to those 0% figures that was said earlier. We're finding that South Africans are really struggling to find that little bit of extra income to put towards savings. And I couldn't agree more that, you know, we should not service our debt and consider, you know, savings at the end of servicing that debt. You know, we have to try put that in there so that at the end of the race or the end of the line, we can actually say we're standing with something, not just standing with a big donut.
Yeah, and Adrian, I must say, though, there's different kinds of debt, aren't there? I mean, my credit card was stolen recently. I haven't called the bank yet because the thief spends less than my ex-wife does. But there's good debt and bad debt, isn't there, Adrian?
I think you get in trouble for comments like that, Michael. yeah, you know, what are you borrowing for? If you're borrowing to buy a car, which is a rapidly depreciating asset, and probably makes very little contribution to your productivity, then you've, you know, that's a really bad allocation of capital. You've taken on debt to fund a depreciating asset. Of course, if you take on debt to buy a factory, which generates income, you know, revenue, profits, jobs, I would describe that as very healthy debt. So we shouldn't just put a line through debt and say, you know, debt is bad. But certainly at the household level, households are not taking on debt to fund the construction of factories. They're taking on debt to fund flat-screen televisions. And you know, unfortunately, I think there's two aspects of South African sort of broad society and economic structure that feeds our very healthy appetite for credit. The first is our very high income inequality. And unequal societies are prone to sort of displays of prosperity. And that means I need to look good and sort of strut the right stuff. And if you don't have income, then you can borrow your way to that appearance. This on the one end of this income inequality barbell, of course, or further to the far side of this income inequality barbell, are not people with low incomes, but are people with no incomes. And so you've got people with some income and high income with a bias towards taking on debt, and you've got people with no incomes who are unable to take on debt and who simply cannot save because they have no income. So we really have a fairly toxic cocktail that feeds this zero savings rate.
And Gerald, I hear you agreeing there in the background. It is part of a social problem, isn't it? To the fact that we've got 10 million unemployed, you know, the fact that so many now earning perhaps are the first generation who are earning a decent salary. And so there is this tendency to want to display one's wealth. And there's also this tendency of sort of fake it till you make it. Some of these myths that swirl around the place. On the other side of that, though, Gerald, we do also have a very strong Stockwell savings culture in this country. So how do we start to tap into that to improve savings rates across the board in that sector of South African society?
Look, I think it's tricky. One of the reasons we're also such poor savers is just like simply lack of knowledge. The average South African doesn't understand how interest works, how compound interest works, and how to grow their money by simply saving. The stock files you're mentioning, also, we do get a lot of distortions in terms of the data which we receive, because they do bandy around the number of 50 billion rand in the stock file economy. But it's not necessarily a net savings number. It's more a turnover in terms of that's the throughput of amount of money which is going through stock files. The actual retained amount is actually much lower because a lot of that money hardly breathes. It's literally stop and go, and it's mainly driven by the fact that Stockwells have for a large period of time been driven by groceries and consumption spending. So although we have a huge amount of money which is turning over in the Stockwell economy, the actual net amount which actually goes towards medium to long-term savings is actually very low. And that's what we're also trying to change. And it's a lot to do with education and also a lot to do with that income gap, in that people are using stock sales as that regular boost of income but not necessarily to create wealth.
Within that, I also get a sense that there's a distrust of financial service providers and perhaps financial advisors per se, and why the Stockvel number, which hasn't really changed. That 48 to 50 billion is a number that I've heard almost for the last decade being bandied about. So imagine if we were to grow that by a money market rate, a good one, of 10% every year, where we would be sitting today if we could harness that capital. But I want to come back to my other point here, and Carlo, perhaps you can touch on this, is perhaps in South Africa, stories of financial advisors taking fees that were in excess of any kind of returns that were generated that weren't fair. We've got lots of regulation around treating customers fairly. That's trying to change that behavior. But do you still think there is a major trust gap that exists in South Africa? And without advice, the research does show you tend to do worse than with a financial advisor.
You tend to do worse. I disagree.
Without advice?
No, well, without advice, I wouldn't say, straightforward in banking. We can get, basic research. We can actually get a little bit of advice. Well, not exactly advice. We can get information off the web. And we can open accounts, savings vehicles, without actually even sitting in front of anybody. So there are means, and I agree with the comment earlier about education. Education definitely falls into that. And I think, going back to the Stockvel side, I think that's why typically, the younger generations understands that their parents and their parents used these means, and they were a safe means because it was within their community. And now we're looking at, a different type of savings where a younger generation is going to, their elders and saying, there's this new type of savings vehicle, or, let's talk to a financial advisor. And I think they can shun away from that in certain instances. And it really is down to education. Because as we see, with different generations, a little bit more education, they actually jump into it and actually get more information from different companies, and are quite interested in looking at the different avenues that are available out there.
The reason I say that, and Adrian, to bring you in, if you look at a lot of these studies into our human behavior, we're human beings, we're not rational, markets are not rational. Those conducted by the likes of Richard Thaler in particular have focused on how we encourage more people to save. And I think one of the biggest, certainly one of the most fundamental behavioral challenges around saving money is that people don't save for long enough to reach their goals. Many people start. Many people say, we know we have to save, but very few finish. And that tends to indicate to me, certainly, that people would be better served by having a coach to say, come on, you've got to push through. You've got to keep that savings in place. Don't dip into it to almost fight our own tendency to shoot ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, I think to borrow from, a different part of life, it's not the case that when you meet a person, and you look them in the eye for the first time, you fall, spectacularly in love with them forever and ever. Love, is something that is grown. It's built. It's the result of interactions and getting to know a person. And one day you wake up and, I fundamentally, intrinsically love this person. Relationships are built. Trust is built. Businesses are built. It is no different to financial wealth and savings. They are built. You don't wake up one day and it's suddenly, there's a pile of saving. Let's figure out how we're going to invest this sensibly. Mm-hmm. And there's some lovely material from the international evidence and cases that shows that one of the biggest explainers of savings is what you saved last month. In other words, saving is a learned behavior. Saving is a habit. And we've written about this extensively. We're about to republish our InvestEC Gibbs Savings Index, which I author under the Gordon Institute of Business Science with InvestEC. And one of the stories that we tell in that case is about the small sort of nudges and behavioral changes that you can bring about that have
dramatic long-run impacts because of, you know, and the points have been raised by both by both your guests, is the power of compounding. And compounding only really happens if you've got time, and time and compounding probably require financial literacy to get in place. So, you know, we're in a little bit of a catch-22, that until we've got the financial literacy, we're unlikely to see the savings, we're unlikely to get that behavior. We need to break those habits and get into the habit of saving, and the amount that we save and contribute can be very modest initially. We just have to get into the habit.
And building that habit will certainly expose people to the beautiful effects of compounding over time. And for me, the problem isn't the maths. It's that financial literacy isn't taught at school, it isn't taught at university, and very rarely is it actually a conversation that's had around the dinner table, Gerald. That's fundamentally where we have to start changing things, isn't it?
And I think that's right. I think also we tend to put too much value to financial literacy taught in schools, etc. Financial literacy and savings as a habit is taught in the household, and savings is a lifestyle. It's beyond a habit. It's about switching off that light when there's no one in the room, about saving the water. It's about the car you choose to drive. And hence, our theme this year is hashtag crazy ways to save. Hashtag crazy ways to save. And we're running a daily competition on the South African Saving Institute Twitter and Facebook pages, and we're giving away a prize of R1,000 a day so people can testify how they save. As my colleague did mention, savings is very much behavioral. So sometimes when we watch the behavior of others whom we can relate to, we can actually start to see that maybe I can do the same. And when you're put to shame by someone who earns much less than you doing the right things and saving as a habit, you basically might be prompted to actually do the right thing yourself. So we're trying to run this competition with our partners, APSA, and hopefully by watching others and hearing the stories of a helper who can send children to school and manage a household versus you, the owner of the household, who's languishing in debt. So we need to start having those conversations freely, and we need to break the barrier of thinking that money is a big top secret topic. It should be discussed openly, and we should share each other's experiences and what works for us when we save.
Very smart. Use people's FOMO against them, that fear of missing out when it comes to savings. Carlo, what would your savings advice or crazy ways to save be?
Well, I'm definitely one to try into that competition. So I think, well, an article I wrote earlier this year was becoming your finance minister of your own household. I think, you know, down to the education side and finding the ways. We typically spoke about the budget side. And I completely agree, you know, bring it back home whereby the education starts from the household and from a young age. And if we can start learning like what 10 rand's worth or whatever, at a young age, we can definitely build it up. And you know, a lot of banking institutions and financial institutions have these built-in education programs whereby, you know, smaller accounts or savings account that slowly educate the youth about savings. And but typically, yes, let's go back to the household, and if mom and dad are doing it and they can show what a savings is, that will pass on from generation to generation. And as we've seen with the Stockfelds, the trust is there with the Stockfeld, opposed to, you know, maybe some certain financial institutions, you know, or the banking sector. So it really is right from the household. It's from the word go.
Adrian, from the School of Behavioral Economics, what are some of the tricks that we can learn and glean to perhaps trick ourselves into better saving habits?
I think one of them, Mike, is, you know, the nudge behavior, that there is small ways in which you can achieve savings. For instance, side pocketing or rounding up spending amounts, that instead, you know, if you spend 99, you take the 1 rand or the 1 cent as change, and that goes to a savings pocket. And there's lots of tools that are available to do that now using digital apps. Perhaps revisit our financial sector en masse. One of my favorite stories in terms of being able to access credit comes from the Grameen Bank, where before you can take a loan, you have to pass a course in financial literacy. And that might get in the way of some, you know, spending misbehavior rather than, you know, you need to stop misbehaving before you can start saving. And I've made the point before, I think Gerald's also made it, and it's about, you know, small ways in which you can have long-run big results. And each of those small contributions starts to add to a savings pocket. Give it some time, give it some compounding. That means getting into, you know, the right investments, getting fees out, getting your behavior good. I love Carlo's point about the Minister of Finance of your own house. And, you know, put that together and you've stopped, you know, you have, I guess, some of the ingredients necessary to contribute to a changed outcome.
Just as long as you don't chop and change the finance minister as we tend to in South Africa. But, I mean, there are some fantastic... And just to... And you know, I want to plug one website in particular because I think that the guy behind Stealthy Wealth does a great job to demystify a lot of this stuff, and he's got some very good real-world examples of how we can find, back to your point, Gerald, crazy ways to save. One of them is putting a geezer blanket on, for example. So even if you think you've got no space or wiggle room to save, you can do things, be it a DIY solution or whatever else, that will put a few extra rand into a saving side pocket at the end of the month. And you'll be amazed at what you can do when you start looking around. But you've got to start, Gerald.
I think you do. I think one crazy way to save is look at the thing that gobbles up most of your money. If it's not debt, it probably is utilities. So you have water and electricity running away. So find ways to save electricity. Water, we had one crazy way to save where one of our panelists suggested bath all your children at the same time in the same water, and everybody was in shock and horror, but that's one crazy way to save. Or if you want the adult version, take a bath with your spouse. You've got to save half the bath water because water and electricity are running away in terms of costs for the average household. So that is one crazy way you can start looking at it. Make savings fun, and that's the craziness we're looking for, to say, look, find that crazy way to save. Everyone can do it if you really think about it.
Well, there you have it. Please don't tweet us pictures of you and your spouse in the shower or the bath, but do use the hashtag CrazyWay to save if you want to get on board the savings month. And let's see if we can move off zero, not setting the bar very high, much like the Proteas at the World Cup. Well done to Bafana Bafana. That said, knocking the Pharaohs out of AFCON. See, miracles still happen. Well, I just want to say thanks to all of the panelists tonight for having a bit of fun with us. Gerald and Mwandi Mbira, acting CEO of South Africa's Savings Institute, Adrian Saville, the CEO of Canon Asset Managers, and Liberty Financial Advisor Carlo Gill. And it's obviously good to have money and the things that money can buy, but it's also good to check up once in a while and make sure that you haven't lost the things that money can't buy as we talk about savings. That's a wrap for Classic Business tonight.